Today on our Tech for Business podcast, we've been talking a lot about AI in business. So today we're finally going to dive into ethics. So we're joined by Kyle, our CEO and president, and our quality assurance analyst, and Andrew, our customer strategy advisor. So welcome, everybody. It's a big crew that we have.
Thank you.
So I'm going to start off just really broadly why this is an important topic to talk about. And we have this kind of beautiful broad spectrum here today. We've got Kyle, who is a leader and kind of leading a full company through AI and implementation. We've got Anne, who's on this compliance end. And we've got Andrew, who's working a lot with the actual tools and customer strategy. So maybe we'll start with Kyle. Why is this topic important to you today?
Because I think it's important for every business as you look to bring AI into your operational side. You do have to have, you know, consideration sides to get to the ethics around anything you bring into your business, and AI is going to be an integral part of that. And is the way AI integrates in, and a large portion of it, I think, is you're expanding your employee base with technology that's assuming, you know, some roles within the organization rather than necessarily having people there. So it's augmenting your people, and it's serving a service role within your company and how you provide information or services to your customers, as well as, you know, assisting with your employee side of it. So understanding the, you know, the data security and the privacy around it, the, you know, the disclosures to the customers, how you're protecting their data side of it, how I keep, you know, Anne from ruining all the fun we want to.
Right.
So there's all these things that you want to kind of balance to keep in mind to make sure that as you're navigating all the benefits of the AI, you're paying attention to also important matters of, you know, legality and privacy and the other side. You can't just set that aside for the shiny object. You have to work it closely together.
Definitely. So, Anne, you have mentioned in the past that this is definitely a topic we need to have. And on that compliance end, it seems obvious, but why is this topic important to you today?
As we're even from our webinar yesterday, when you're thinking about implementing AI, I'm thinking about the guardrail already.
Yeah.
And really in how you implement anything within your organization, whether people recognize it or not, they're looking at the values and ethics of their organization. What do we speak to? How do we operate as an organization? We are customer focused. We are innovative. All of these questions we'll go through today, or if, as many as we do, really speak to how we align this to our values. And integrity is right in there. And to Kyle's point, it is always awesome to add shiny, new, fun, but we have such a great base of our values to push into this. Those considerations are really at the forefront. It's, in my mind, it's reminding and educating. That's that's the piece that we want to be aware of. I don't think the ethics, so to speak, of people are in question, if that makes sense, when they're using this. It's more the awareness of where this can extrapolate down the road, whether it's the results, whether it's the questions, to gain a bigger understanding.
Definitely. And then, Andrew, as someone who, we've had you on the podcast before talking a lot about this practical application of AI tools and working with customers and helping them with implementation. So what comes up for you? Why is this topic important to you today?
I think it's important mainly for the, just as Anne said, the understanding that there's a possibility there is bias in being able to be aware of it. It's not saying that you're going to your AI is biased or pointing fingers at anybody, but just being aware that it's a possibility that we should be aware of. I think the one of the things Kyle said that made me think, and we have all these labels for coffee or clothes or diamonds that they're ethically sourced or they're fair trade. And I don't know if we'll be there with AI anytime soon to say it's a ethically sourced AI, but I could see a label like that being applicable to, you know, even just the environmental side, which we could get into, of the energy it takes to, you know, give you a prompt, the computing power to say, hey, this is, you know, 100% solar AI generated prompt or whatever, you know, but understanding that you're taking a product, you know, and you're using that product, you should understand from start to finish how that is being generated. If that's coffee, if that's diamonds, or if that's a AI generated email.
Definitely. I love that. That's such a good analogy. So Andrew, you mentioned a little bit of the bias, and I know that our experience, at least my experience, is a lot with like the data, because AI is fueled by data. So can you talk a little bit more about what that bias looks like? If my data is crap, then my AI is crap. You know, what does this look like when we're thinking in ethical terms?
Yeah. Like, I believe that there's bias everywhere and we need to be aware of it, and that the data is where it could start. Understanding the strengths and weaknesses of your data and where there may be gaps.
Okay.
There's a lot of real world examples, unfortunately, of some of those. If that's facial recognition that we've seen in years past, where it doesn't recognize some people of certain skin tones because it wasn't trained on those people. It's a similar thing with AI and the prompts. In the previous podcast, I used my rural banking analogy. If you're going to give a loan approval to somebody, you're really good at farm loans, but you're not good at small business loans. You need to understand where some of that bias is and being able to think a whole picture of what data is there and what data maybe am I missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's important to ask for, you know, when you're prompting, you need to ask the AI to give you the research, the supporting research for the conclusions that it's come to. And that's, if you do that, then you do have to fact check it. You do have to, you know, you have to stay in the driver's seat side of it, let it produce its results, ask for the facts, and then review those and undermine, you know, determine if it is accurate in the conclusions that it came up with. So I think that's one way to counteract the bias to still allow you to make the determination.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just taking the prompt and saying, hey, look, I got this awesome prompt. It's really criticizing and being like, is this how I want it to be? Or is this right?
Yeah. That's fact check it. Yeah. I mean, you got to fact check it. I mean, you see the disclosure a lot of places now, how the LLM is saying it's AI is not always, it makes mistakes, so double check it. It's like, yeah, it's not.
That was a really neat, perfect example that I had opportunity to use recently to say the prompt was basically compare our policy against the framework document with citation. Mm. And I'm like, oh, wow, it came up with like 10 or 12 at the end. I'm like, never in a format that I would know how to do after college. But I did go through each one and say, oh, is that this section? Is this relevant? Is it? And it was, but I wouldn't rely on that to just say, hey, this is a deliverable. Let's go. That it really speaks to, I think, the ethical dilemma in general outlines and really enforces the idea that the human element will never go away. Mm-hmm. There has to be that human sense human understanding that can't be gathered from, I don't want to use common sense because I think Todd would give me a hard time about, but that logical sense that might not be yielded from a prompt or a search or any sort of data gathering.
One piece I heard on or read through Saturday, I think, describes AI, and if you keep it in perspective, as AI is a prediction machine, and what it's looking is predict, you know, the information based on your prompting and respect side of it. So it's going to make those predictions off of the data that it's been fed, to what Andrew was saying inside of it, of what it was trained on, and going through those sides, and then it's going to fill the gap where you get those hallucination sides on those sides of it, of information it doesn't have. But if you're asking it to have sources and be able to have the citations and the proper supporting materials for the conclusion, you basically are directing it to say, don't fill the gaps in with this other information, that are don't make stuff up. And it's getting better. But I think especially in the earlier versions of the AI we've seen was doing a lot of that, and they're doing a lot to close those gaps, and it's obviously getting a lot more data to work with as well. But I think that's just something to be cognitive of, and something to request. Yeah, well, you're going to get far better results and far better actual true information side with it. And then the only final trick that I'll use that is use multiple LLMs. I mean, you can have, you know, there's many times I'll prompt on, you know, I'll do Microsoft Copilot and then I'll do it in Gemini. I want to see the comparable sides of those and see how much alignment between the different distinctive LLMs will come together side of it. And it can be an interesting exercise to run it through multiple models.
I think the thing I've seen more with a lot of the prompts, if it's Gemini, if it's Copilot, whatever it is, there's a lot more links I've noticed in the last maybe 6 months of,
yes,
you know, it's like a term paper. It's citing its sources. Hey, here's this response. It's truly citing where it got that information, and letting us know, hey, if you want to fact check me, yeah, click on the link. This is where I got this information.
I'm looking at a window in Copilot right now, and it does do exactly that. And that one I used yesterday, just some other effort, it said citation or something similar. I can't remember what the exact words, but that is me. And I'm always the fact checker. I want to make sure that this is accurate. And even if it is pulled from there, I want to read the source. I want to then go there and say, what kind of source is this? Great. I appreciate this. But if this is from a source of ill repute, I don't want that data. I want that then massaging the prompt to say excluding these kinds of sources.
You mean Reddit's not 100% all factual?
I had that as an example as we go through. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's it. That's a popular one. I mean, the deep research modes in a lot of LLMs, I think, are great ways to do it. And they lean very heavily on the citation side, obviously, side of it, because that's where they're set. But I mean, when you need a lot of that, I think just the number of deep research modes that are now showing up in the LLM side of it do help answer for that in a lot of ways too, that it will go out and pull on many, many sources where you see it looking at 160 different sources. It's a lot of information, a lot of detail, but again, the accuracy of it is improving tremendously, but you definitely still want to check it.
Definitely. So we talked a little bit about data, you know, data in, data out, and maybe you can kind of move us a little bit into this privacy component and ethical use of like our data in these tools like Copilot or ChatGPT, and what kind of things we should be aware of on how it's using our data and how privacy needs to be a priority.
That's such a great question. I really do believe that is those elements of the ethical dilemma are really going to be solved with more education.
Mm-hmm.
Showing what, being definitive in this is company sensitive data, this is not. This mm-hmm. is the source we're taking, we're leaning from, this is not. Give real world examples of what the example yesterday that of a red line that we will absolutely not go here. Or yeah. I used the example a few years back where the nurses were fired when looking at Prince's health records.
Oh yeah.
Those continue to exist, and you're bound by the same ethical principles, whether it's personal, professional, whether you're looking in and using an AI tool or not. So should you be using an AI tool inside of the walls of a hospital to say, what is Ann Platson's date of birth and the most recent? You shouldn't, and you know that. And yeah. It comes hand in hand with the repercussions for violating those. We want to educate. Can you get everything? No, absolutely not. This is new. But within certain, again, guardrails, we want to define, educate, say, yes, do this, but please don't do this. This still aligns with the requirements of any sort of framework that you have to either use the actual company data or not to definitively. And it can be what feels like kind of gray area, but at the end of the day, it seems like it's getting even more clear mm-hmm. because if you're looking for Kyle, you used the example, like looking for a script for something we're deploying, and that is just a script for one system to another. That is absolutely wide open, no big deal. The validity of it, you would know what you're seeing. I wouldn't for any reason. But to find things like that and know that we're using this for innovation without using your controlled or limited data, that's where it's again just really the education.
Yeah there's a very distinct difference between asking the AI to say build me a PowerShell script or a Python script to do this
mm-hmm.
and asking the AI engine to give me the data insights for our payroll from last
yep.
quarter.
Exactly.
You know, you should not be dropping your payroll file into just any LLM out there. You need to make sure that you have it in it's a secured and privatized LLM to provide those value sides with it. And that's, again, the end point, the training aspect of it to say, yes, you can use multitude, but they're not equal as far as the data sensitivity that needs to go into them. And you should put a public script out there to have a look at that's got your API keys embedded into them. Side of it should not be dropped into the public LLM. I mean, they're just trained to make sure, cut it out and analyze it, do something. There's simple solutions to it, but you just have to be aware of it. You can't just be going rogue on it.
There is a recent example. I think I read an article on it where somebody took in their email signature, they had a similar prompt to whenever they got an automatic email, and they would send back this auto reply with essentially commands for an LLM. And it provided that person in a couple instances, you know, several thousand or whatever, with server credentials. Because he put in his signature, you know, hey, whatever, and it automatically gave him server credentials and different things in order for him to figure out that information. So, you know, something was not right in that response engine, as you said, Kyle, where it's like, why would you have that information available for AI? It just seems kind of silly.
Yeah, wild.
I do think that there is going to be a lot of innocence in it. I think if you do something three times after knowing it's not yielding appropriate results, that's one thing. But I think there are going to be times that people will use a prompt with no malice in intent, but suddenly it does yield a whole lot of passwords or some private information that wasn't the intent. But then that's also going to be an education to say, you're responsible for the information you are reviewing. It's one thing if you got it by accident, but if you continued it down that road, there will have to be some sort of repercussions for gaining that.
Yeah.
I think on your kind of the another aspect of the privacy that kind of goes along with that is the more personal you want your AI, the more information you have to give it. So understanding what the privacy policy, if you want to provide that to, you know, Google or whoever, to make those personal responses, you have to understand that, you know, data breaches are, you know, likely and could happen, and what the repercussions of that is, and that you're giving up your information to have that customized email response comes with potential consequences.
As a company that is definitely using AI and exploring these different tools, how do you maintain that customer trust and transparency? How much transparency should there be? And what should we sort of ask for from our vendors?
Yeah, our approach again is, I think transparency is key side with it, is to have the supporting document sides to say, yes, we use AI, but we are using it in, you know, say it's under Microsoft Azure OpenAI or under Microsoft sides. It is, you know, it is under data privacy sides of those. We're not disclosing anything to the public. Learning module sides of those, it's anonymized. I mean, you have to supply the supporting documentation like many other ways that we control the kind of sensitive data side that we have within our systems to say we're not disclosing that, and this is the technologies we're using and how we apply it. But I think it is important not to try to hide that you're using AI. I think you definitely need to disclose that and emphasize it, and then identify and disclose how you are protecting that information. And you're going to be regulated, you know, under a multitude of facet sides that you need to do that. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself in some legal trouble from GDPR and a number of things. You're going to face some significant fines and all things if you don't. I think it's going to be impossible to not leverage and use AI in some form, because it's coming to so integrate what we're doing. So you have to take steps now in your organization to make sure you recognize, you research, you identify, you get the proper licensing, and then you get the supporting documentation to disclose, and you get that imparted by your other customer engagement documentations, and you potentially put it on your website under data privacy, data protection, how you're doing that.
Yeah.
I think being able to educate your staff on, if you have an AI tool, that if they get a question from a customer, okay, hey, I got this, you know, example for us is, hey, it helped me reset my password, it wasn't right. How the AI comes to some of those decisions is important as well. There's a thing called a black box where you give a prompt, stuff happens, and then you get a response back. And where that stuff happens is difficult sometimes to narrow down depending on what type of model you are using. But being able to understand the steps, even if you don't know all of them or understand the in-depth, you know, nitty-gritty of them, but understanding when a prompt happens or something on our website is, you know, prompted, this is how it gets the response.
Like in our AI implementation sides on it, when we have AI to help with, say, support desk automation sides of it, that is actually logged to our documentation system, and it logs every automation that it's done and everything it did. So again,
and Kyle checked on this well before we implemented, because I was concerned.
Yes.
But if I'm running even standing in my door or going, well, I'm consuming. So, you know, it's just thinking those through and making sure you have the checks and balances to validate. And if somebody asks a question, you can disclose and say it. And the tools support that. Again, most of them do, as long as you're using in the general business use case side of it. Research also understand the logging ability to extrapolate how it performed those actions, what it did. So there isn't a black box, as Andrew said. It can't be this behind the curtain, nobody saw what was happening with that data for a period of time, and then this result came out. It needs to be fully traced and logged. And again, it's really no different to me than way we view our own staff member sides. I mean, we have logging and information side, even on everything we do internally side, as people side, on how we service our customers, to be able to have the proof in those sides if there is ever a concern or question about steps that were taken or those things, is we have logs to kind of review and go through. It's like any general, I think, good security practice side of those, you want to be able to know you can answer those questions if for some reason it comes up. And AI is no different in my mind. It's viewed as almost it's another staff member, a digital part of your team, and you need to treat it with guardrails too. It has to work within the same landscape as our people do.
Yeah. We're kind of joking that Anne is the one coming and making sure that, you know, X, Y, and Z is getting done.
Like party pooper?
Yeah. Oh, man. She's just making sure that we all have our life jackets on when we get on the boat. Okay. It's
yeah.
Just.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody likes to wear those stupid life jackets because they're not comfortable in my house, but you know. Yeah.
And checking under the seats to make sure we got enough.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. Well, Anne, maybe you can answer, when you're thinking implementing AI and making sure that we're doing it with integrity and in this ethical way, what are some blind spots that you see companies or foresee companies making? Some things that they're missing.
I think the biggest blind spot for any company, and this is my opinion, in implementing any AI, is taking the human element out of it, or not recognizing that the human part is still the most significant part in understanding where the results are coming, how everything is generated. If there is not that piece, that's where you can go off the rails really fast.
Yeah.
I think that's very valid. And there's a very good book out there called AI Driven Leaders. And it's inside those things. The whole premise side is that AI is a thought partner, and
yes.
and you are in control. You know, that don't abdicate your leadership to the AI. The thought leadership is with you. The AI is your partner. Do not abdicate your leadership to the AI. And I think that, to me, is very well stated. And I think that's where it gets very empowering side of it, because that is the role that it's in, and that is the proper way that it does gain people tremendous efficiencies. It can give you, you know, digital superpowers in many ways to make better decisions, go through those things, but it is not, again, it's your Robin. You're still got to be Batman. I mean, you got to stay in. You're the lead. Yeah, and get that done right. I mean, I think that if you keep that in mind, it helps you to align where AI works, that you're not going to just replace everybody. And that goes to, I think, when people look at job replacements, the other side's on it, is I think when you look at it from a leadership standpoint side, you got to look at it as, this is how I'm going to make my people better. It's how I'm going to enhance our people. And they'll be replaced. I want to enhance them or make them better. We want to be able to scale up without scaling out, but we want to augment them with this technology set that's going to make them and enhance them, do better, and then we can do even greater and better things. And that's exactly what you want out of AI, and that's the way to approach it. I think it's a fallacy and an error to look at and say, I want to use AI to replace the people out of the process side of it. And that's where I think people have had challenges around AI, and that's where there's a false sense there. So if you keep it in the enhancement side of it, I think you'd be very pleased and you'll get great, tremendous results out of AI.
Yeah, I said in a previous podcast, but I'll say it again. The reason we were hired isn't to do the emails and the chats and the things like that. It's our creative mindset. It's what makes us who we are and why our companies hired us. And so having AI even take a portion of that away gives you time to be more creative, be more insightful, be more driven to continue the company and grow the company.
Be more strategic. You know, the other aspect that gets thrown out there too is AI does not have context.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Again, it doesn't understand the context. People do. So you need to, that's why you got to stay in the leadership role, because you provide the context. You provide the reason and for doing what it's doing, and the other can apply conclusion and logic to what it's executing under. So you have to stay in that side of it. But, you know, and Andrea needs even your title side of it, I think, to make your people strategic and allow them to get through those and get rid of the mundane and just the task related side where AI can do that incredibly well. And it can obviously it's got superpowers in its data processing and the ability to get you information. You know, that's to open up that creative mind and say the what if and what if I could do these things and those constraints is where I think it's just so exciting, because you can stop worrying about the constraints of the time to go through all the data as to why you didn't do things, and you can just start throwing the creative and the strategic thought process there, and just the amazing things that you can start producing and creating and doing, because it can enable you to do some things that you just did not have the time or the wherewithal to do is where I think it's super, super exciting. But you got to put some understanding and constraints and recognize that it's not all equal and there's still data to protect and you do have ethics to still work within and keep it alongside you under that. It does not have carte blanche to go do whatever. You got to keep your controls in place. So we still need Anne. We still need Anne to keep the rails.
It is pretty amazing. I used an example in a previous podcast to say this, the AI tools can get us maybe the 50 or 80% of the grind work done with review. But
That's huge.
I think about I'm older, but having to actually go to a library and cite sources and look at the book and go through, I think about those examples all the time to say, okay, now I have 12 valid sources that I can review before using them, but I have all of that aggregated. Instead of going out to find it, it's right in front of me. And now I can really jump into my big paper, my big project, with all the resources at my fingertips, rather than having to spend, 8 hours getting the information.
Yeah.
I heard a quote that in 2024, Meta released one of their language model sides of it. The amount of tokens it was trained on side of it was the equivalent of 250 million books.
Wow.
And that was in 2024. So it's only better, because the version of AI we're using today is the worst version we're going to use going forward. I mean, it only gets better every day you use it. So, I mean, to have the ability of something to use your library analogy side of it, I mean, that's more books than any library is holding.
Oh, for sure.
The fact that, within seconds or minutes sides of it, this you know, this technology can give you the relevant information, scour through that side is incredibly amazing. And it's just a great time we're in to catch on these side of it. It's just, you know, it's good conversations to understand how to maximize that, how to make sure that the people aspect is not lost out of those things and make use of this beautiful gift that I think we've been presented with. I think there's just tremendous abilities that it can provide to do many, many great things and augment. I think great minds can become even tremendously greater with the use of this tool.
Very much so.
And that feels like a beautiful place to kind of wrap up. I mean, Kyle put this beautiful little bow on it. Yeah. So I just want to thank you all for coming today. And I think that this is a conversation we will come back to in the future. We'll see where AI is in even 6 months from now and how these things may have changed or most likely stayed the same. So thank you guys for coming today.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Like, subscribe, or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.